This is the April 14 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, found online at BlueReefInc.com, and Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities at RMCommodities.com. Thanks, gentlemen, for being with us. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org. Merrill Crowley, I'll start with you. Can you put the fundamentals in place as we know them today for the markets? And I think we'll start with corn, please.
Corn is being looked at as one of the tighter situations. And I don't think, as we stand right now, it is tight, but I don't think that if we have a good crop in South America, a good crop here in the U.S., that, that situation will hold through the year. That's a big guess because nobody knows what the weather's going to do. They're already talking in South America, some of that stuff getting drier. La Nina is not supposed to go away. I think the best guesstimate was sometime in July. We have our dry areas that we have over in the southern plains. I think still the Canadian plains are dry. So it's going to kind of depend on weather and how that works out. Right now we do have a tight situation. You know, prices are meant to either reduce demand or cause demand destruction. So as of yet, I really don't see demand destruction when it comes to corn. But China doesn't seem to be real eager to come in and buy corn, not only from us, but for even from South America. Yes, they've replaced, about 2 million metric ton of the Ukrainian crop. And I don't know how much corn they're getting from Russia. That's the kind of thing we're seeing through these markets is the fact that I'm starting to see things like, well, we're going to ship this much out of Ukraine. Yes, it's down probably a third of what we saw them previously doing. But things are coming out when the original conversation was nothing was coming out. We're seeing wheat being shipped out of Russia. Again, it's curtailed from what we normally would be looking at seeing coming out of Russia, but there's still stuff coming out when originally it was thought very little would get out. So I'm still looking for May highs, whether or not that'll be true. If you look at wheat 224, I believe, was the top for July wheat. Most of the highs in corn follow anywhere from 3 to 6 months. So if it's 3 months, you're looking for a May high. 6 months, you're looking for an August high. It was just what we had in 2012. And if you're looking for a high in that time period, you would be saying drought's probably the problem, what caused the prices to go up into June, July.
Jim Nellinger, I know that you work with producers and try to help them make their budgets. Has anything changed in the last month and a half, especially because of the prospective plantings report and the price of corn moving higher, that would allow them, with the high price of fertilizer, to put more corn acres in? And do you think they will?
Interesting you say that, Todd. I just had a conversation this morning with an individual that, in fact, did just that, switched some intended bean acres back to corn with this rally. And I think that's part of what has gone into this straight up rally in corn. On top of what Merrill was talking about, I think the acreage report, obviously shocked the market on the corn side being as slow as it was. And I do think that maybe you're picking up some acres in here, but Mother Nature is still going to be the final dictator of that, and here in the Eastern Corn Belt, certainly on the wet side. So if we can get in and start planting relatively quickly, the corn market may in fact has done its job in picking up a few acres, and likely that June report on the acreage from the USDA could grow. So great question, Todd. I think it's happening. But again, the quicker we can get into the fields and plant, I think maybe the more that farmers will be able to react to these higher corn prices.
Chuck, offhand, have you moved in the field there in Lafayette, Indiana area yet?
There's been very little done here, Todd. I think the acreage number didn't really shock us. As you know, we were the lowest one, and we've been saying that all winter. So with this kind of weather pattern we're in, I really think it limits anybody who's really going to try to move into more corn, especially in some of the northern states that are snowed in. The other practical part of it, finding anhydrous or more nitrogen to apply to corn is a lot more expensive than it was when most guys bought it in early winter. So I seriously have my doubts that corn acres are going to go up very much as we move into the spring with such a wet and cold spring we're having right now.
Can the crop that's coming out of South America, the Safrina crop, suffice the need of the marketplace once it comes in, at least through a good portion of the summertime, do you suppose, Chuck?
Well, I think we have to step back a minute and say we're making history every day. There's never been a situation since World War II when you have such a conflict going on in Europe, especially in an area when you have one of your fifth largest exporters of corn, fourth largest exporter of wheat. Maybe they're getting some of that out, what they have left over, but again, serious doubts in my mind that Ukraine is really going to plant much of anything, or really are they going to harvest anything, because this war does not look to be ending. It looks to be escalating and could go on for a long time. I look at this as a multi-year event going on in Ukraine, that production out of that region could be limited for years to come.
And I'll follow up with you and then pick up with Merrill and Chip on this side of that question. How does the rest of the world compensate in that case? What happens across the planet? Do more corn acres get planted? Do more soybean acres get planted? Do more wheat acres get planted? Do they all come up? And where do you suppose that will take place? I'll start with you, Chuck.
Well, I think it will happen, but one of the other problems with the region and the conflict over there, okay, South America gets a lot of their fertilizer out of Belarus and Russia. Okay, that's disrupted there. As long as that port in that area is restricted on anything going in and out, sometime in the coming summer months, South America is going to have to resupply its fertilizer. Is that going to be easy? No. Also, the price of fertilizer is going to be extremely expensive in the coming years, so I look at that as a limitation on production going forward, whether it be any country in the world. So, yeah, we'll try to respond to this, and we'll try to produce as much as we can, but I think there's some practical real-world things going on due to this conflict that we've never had to face before.
Have you been considering this as well, Merrill?
As far as just production and what's going to be replaced, I'm looking at wheat currently. Your Canadian wheat production was estimated at 22.9, and that was down 34.8% from the 35.2 million metric ton grown the previous year. So that's a 12.3 million metric ton loss that we had in addition to the Ukraine. China was saying their wheat crop was much worse than they've ever seen, and now it's much better than they originally thought, so that's going to be an improvement. Like I said earlier, we are seeing some Russian wheat moving. Trade with Russia was up, I think, almost 25%, maybe 28% in an article I read between China and Russia. So I'm not saying all that's wheat and corn, but it is trade between the two nations that is up from last year. Ukraine wheat loss is about 20 million metric ton. If you add 4 million metric tons coming out of India and you take the 12 million metric tons, say it does come up in the Canadian wheat province, you'd only have a 4 million metric ton loss for the entire wheat crop through the world. And we're seeing good weather in Australia. So, and right now the EU wheat is good. Again, fertilizer may be affecting that, which is a good point that Chuck made out. But, you know, if you start looking at all these bits and pieces, it's not as big a hit as originally assumed. The biggest problem is some of these smaller countries that can't afford to pay for the higher prices as everybody is panicked, looking for corn and wheat and beans.
And Chip, have you thought how things might be reconfigured as well?
Well, that's what the market's trying to figure out, just for everyone else. Like Chuck mentioned, how much are they going to be able to plant in Ukraine? Can they... which to me, I think that they have been portraying in a show of potential strength that, yes, we're going to get stuff planted. But the realities are just, there's just dozens of issues from top to bottom with getting that crop planted, let alone will they be able to harvest it? Is it multiple years? So I think that's part of what the market's trying to wrap its brain around, and it's just going to be kind of a moving target. Once we get 60 days down the road, we're going to know a little more about exactly how many acres they got planted there. And then to Chuck's point earlier, is this something, you know, Putin didn't move into Ukraine to not move back out. He's there for the long haul unless he gets expelled. And that's a multi-year process, to Chuck's point. And so is this something that the Black Sea is going to be, you know, I guess 70-80% down from exports and production than what we're used to? Is it a multi-year situation? So, yeah, I mean, I think it, like everyone, we're trying to wrap our brains around that and the logistics of how do you get, you know, wheat and corn supplies from other parts of the world to where Ukraine supplied that, particularly Middle East, Africa. It is a major disruption. And, you know, I think obviously a large part of, you know, the reason we've seen this, these big price increases, particularly in corn, but, you know, to a lesser extent, you know, wheat and beans as well from the vegetable oil standpoint.
Chuck, in the commodity markets, does it make very much difference that OPEC stood by Russia, relatively speaking, saying they would not make up the bulk of the difference in the lack of crude oil that has normally been exported from that country that could be in part picked up by some of the OPEC member nations in full, and Russia is OPEC plus, I suppose. And I'm just wondering how that works and what impact it might have.
Well, there's certainly countries that are more favorable to working with Russia, whether it be open or behind the scenes. But interesting to note that OPEC's not interested in or can't supposedly increase their production. I think one of the things that we look at is, you know, crude oil is part of this equation, too, as well as fertilizer and grain. Interesting, this week, the president increased the possibility of using E15, another positive for the corn market as we move into the summer months. So it's a multifaceted problem. Again, the world hasn't faced anything like this for quite a few years. So lots of unknowns and lots of uncertainty. But I think there's things that go on behind the scenes that we don't know about to fill some of these voids that, with Russia and the sanctions that are going on.
Merrill, do you think consumers will go to blender pumps to fill up with E15? There are about, 2,000 to 2,300 of those across the United States, most of them in the Midwest states.
I think a lot of people will try to save money any way they can when it comes to fuel. I think it was J.P. Morgan had an article out here just recently talking about how we're starting to see some demand destruction already in the gasoline consumption as people look at not only just the increase in the gas pump, the increase in the price of food, and just pull out a number and decide it's all gone up and it's going up. Inflation in itself was, I believe, 8.5%, if I'm not mistaken, on the last report. So I think you are seeing consumers respond. I think you're seeing them start to pull in the purse strings. Another thing that you could consider, it just seems like the Biden administration is just a cat chasing after its tail, trying to figure out what to do with these high prices and an election coming up, you know, in this November. And can they panic enough to maybe start using price controls? I mean, that's something that's not uncommon and was definitely going on during World War II. So, you know, I just see there's a lot of things up in the air. I think Chuck said it best, where, you know, this is something we've not gone through and haven't gone through in many, many years. And is China going to be able to get their COVID in a situation where they can start dealing? Because if they don't, then they're going to be cutting back on fuel. They're going to be cutting back on bean use and possibly even corn. And if they do that, again, that's just another situation that hurts the price of grain. It's easy to find something that'll increase the price of corn or beans or wheat right now. But as we move and we start quantifying the numbers, that's going to start chipping away at prices.
On that note, Chip, I want to stay with the crude oil theme, at least the gasoline theme. That usually is very inelastic. People will slow down as the price of gas goes up. In the last WASDE, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, USDA increased ethanol usage by 25 million bushels of corn in that particular report. The May report is coming out. What do you think USDA will do with the ethanol number for the coming year? The current year would be showing an increase as we came out of COVID. I'm wondering whether the coming year might not shrink that back.
I would not be shocked if you didn't see exactly that, Todd. A lot of arguments, even prior to this announcement about the additional use of E15, a lot of indications that the USDA probably had some room to raise ethanol to begin with. Margins are really decent there. We may have a developing market. Maybe it's temporary, but a developing market of selling our ethanol into Brazil as they try to catch up and resupply after their drought situation. And so it would not shock me, especially if crude oil prices hold firm here north of $100 for very long, that, ethanol isn't a very strong force, not just this year, but, 2023 as well.
Chuck, are you surprised that the price of crude oil is as high as it is at this point, given what the Biden administration has done in the last 2 weeks?
Well, we saw a pretty good correction when that announcement came out. I think thing about price going back down, though, we've seen gasoline prices in our area drop below $4 into the $3.75 or $3.80 levels. So if we can add ethanol to it more in the summer, I think crude oil is kind of fair valued here as we go forward. Do the consumers really cut back? There's still room for crude oil to go higher over time. The other thing about what's going on, eventually we're going to have to replace the strategic reserve. So the risk or the gamble from the Biden administration is, can they replace that cheaper? That's what they're betting on. That's just something we don't know, and we'll have to see how it turns out with the conflict with Russia.
Let's turn our attention to new crop pricing. Tell me how far along you think farmers are across the nation for both corn and soybeans. And we'll start with that with each of you, and then I'll come back to each of you and talk about what you think maybe they should do at this point. That could be something, could be nothing. Merrill, how far along are soybeans and corn for new crop sales by producers?
2022, I would say anywhere from 15% to 25% on the corn sales.
For both then? How about for soybean?
For soybeans, I would say maybe the same. I mean, you got farmers out there that are going to look at the costs, look at their returns, and start making some sales. With what happened last year, a lot of them are going to drag their feet, maybe, and hopefully not till it's too late. Some of them are going to just drag their feet and see how high they can get it. Now, when you start talking about 23 crop, some of the people that I know are starting to price in and have been able to get some some nitrogen locked in for 23, and have taken it the stance to go ahead and try to lock in a low that will give them a good year if they have a good crop of corn, and it, they're trying to make sure it doesn't go below $5 for 23.
Yeah, I would agree with Merrill right there in that 20-25% range. I think is probably a good level, probably an accurate level from elevator managers and farmers I've talked to. Just today going through my mind, the back of my mind, particularly on corn here. When you look, and I'm talking about, the best, highest yielding corn ground here across central Illinois, Indiana, into Ohio. When you look at current price levels, you're looking at the potential for $500 to $600 net profit margins in corn right now. At a certain level, in my opinion, it just makes sense to spend the money on puts or put spreads and lock that in and sleep a little better throughout the rest of the growing season. I don't think you can stay at this strong of an angle of upside ascent right now without corrections along the way. And boy, when you are staring at, you know, $500+ margins in corn, it really makes me take notice.
Well, I think Merle and Chip are pretty much in line with the way we're thinking. Different guys have been more aggressive and some less aggressive. But as you move forward and you look at these great prices, as Chip said, you know, you've got a really good crop insurance value. We've got some option tools. If you want to buy a put option, you could lock in $6 corn for not a terrible expense. On the soybean side, you could, you know, lock in something in the $13.50 range with a put option. You combine that with your crop insurance. One thing I think, you know, you need to be flexible this year, though, as we move into the growing season. The sensitivity is certainly there. So the Climate Prediction Center came out today and said 59% chance El Nino, La Nina continues. That means dry weather continues out west. So the upside potential, if we see the yield starting to be impacted, would be pretty significant. So combination of all those different products that are available to farmers, perfect year to use those tools. It's rare in history that you can, you know, lock in a profit, as Chip stated there, for not a lot of money, and guarantee a farmer can make a good profit.
And Merrill started in on the 23 crop year. I don't usually talk about that, certainly this far out, but it seems like a prudent conversation at this point, and it depends a great deal on how long the war in Ukraine might last, I suppose. And we still have supply chain issues and COVID problems in China and other things happening across the planet, but maybe if either of you, and I think, Chuck, I'll start with you, I have thought about 23. Is there a reason to do that, in your opinion?
I don't think so at this point in time. I think it's just too many unknowns out there that are even less predictable than the normal factors we usually talk about when we're talking about pricing a crop that far out. We certainly got to deal with this inflation factor. That doesn't look to be dying down, so there's lots of components that tell me that I don't really want to price any 23 crop.
Yeah, I would agree with Chuck. I mean, it's very tempting. You look out there and you see 660 December 23 corn futures. It really makes you take notice. I think there's two issues with that. I think the only way I'd do that is with some sort of an option strategy, put strategy, something on paper, because of this. A, you have the real risk of not knowing what input costs are going to do. No one would have thought they would have been as high as they were for this spring. What if they go up another 20, 30, 40% and 660 isn't enough? Two, we don't know what the February crop insurance price is going to be. And there is a possibility, even though it's tremendous levels and we haven't been able to sell that high a level that far out ever, that you end up selling well below the spring crop insurance price and kind of shoot yourself in the foot. So there's risk with doing it. There's probably money there, arguably. I wouldn't argue that there's probably profitability out there. But other than some sort of a put strategy, I don't know that I'd be willing to step too far off of first base on the 23 crop just yet.
Then, Merrill, I'll let you come back on this one, because you did talk about it to begin with, and you were using some option strategies to mitigate some of the risks that are involved, correct?
Right. We're using options to set a floor so that we're not locked into it, because, like you said, there's a lot of things yet that can happen. You know, you look at your expenses, and the reason I think you look ahead and try to see what you can do here is, you know, these expenses will peak and come down. And you say, well, the war could go on forever. There's a lot of what-ifs that can happen. But if you can set up a situation whereby you can protect a floor that is profitable based on what you're looking at now and adding some percentage, you know, of extra cost, then I see no reason not to use puts to take care of that. Selling cash, that may be a totally different story. That depends on your risk tolerance and whether or not you're willing to, say, buy something back. You asked the question about how we handle this year in comparison to our crop insurance. And our crop insurance guarantee for corn is 590. The board's 735. Our crop insurance guarantee for beans are 1433, and the board's 1501. I guess in this case, I don't see at this point in time the crop insurance doing a whole lot for you in a marketing situation.
To Merrill's point, we are quite a bit higher, right? And so in the case of corn, we're way higher than what the 590 spring crop insurance price was. And to Merrill's point, it's not really covering your downside much from these levels. In my mind, you know what that level was, 590 times your APH times your coverage level. You know what your guarantee is. The higher you go, it almost forces you to, you know, maybe do some marketing and some risk management above there. And in my mind, that's where the harvest price option comes in, is if you're early on those sales and your yield goes down and prices go up at fall, you get to recalculate your revenue at that higher level. So it can kind of backstop you against that. So, but I think the take home from, you know, what I hear Merrill saying is in corn, we're, you know, $1.50 almost higher than the spring price in the corn market. And, right now, crop insurance really giving you much price protection because we've so far outpaced the spring crop price.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. Merrill Crowley from AgTraderTalk.com. We'll start with you.
Try to figure out some way to take advantage of some of these prices. You don't want to get overblown. There's a lot of weather between now and then. There's also some things starting to get numbers placed on it. You know, you go into a drought and you see the numbers, and at first they look like it's a terrible thing. Last year, you know, sitting here with the U.S. And thinking that the corn crop was hurt here in the U.S., and when we got all said and done, the corn crop was a bumper. You know, things change like that all the time, and you have to keep on top of this. And the typical movement is to find a high, and if you find it in May, then it's more than likely to be much lower when it comes into the fall. And you say, well, Merrill, how's that going to happen? I don't know how soon they may change the war. How long are the people in Germany, how long are the people in France going to put up with the inflation levels that they are having to withstand and the food shortages they're having to withstand before they decide to do something about it and possibly join their Ukraine? So there's a lot of what-ifs. I think the thing that the battle cry right now with most marketers is keep it flexible. And I know options are expensive, but when you look at it in the overall picture and what you're paying and what you're protecting, I think you know, you need to be pushing that pencil and probably getting some sort of protection in place.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agro Marketing, your final word?
Yeah, first of all, happy Easter to everyone. Hopefully we get some better weather post-Easter and can kick off planting here. I think to segue from what Merrill said, 100%. Don't get, don't stick your head in the sand expecting these higher prices are going to last forever. $500-$600 an acre potential net profit in corn right here, couple $200-$300 an acre in beans. It may not last forever. It's going to be a volatile ride. There are going to be large corrections along the way in corn. I'm almost certain of it. And it's not the time to focus on other things. Keep the markets and the potential volatility and the profit levels at the forefront of your mind. And most importantly, in my opinion, have a plan. If you don't have one, develop one as soon as possible, and then execute that plan to your best ability.
Dan Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities.
Well, it's an opportunity for the American farmer this year, due to the fact that the Ukrainian farmers are really going to struggle in that whole country. So as a producer, we go out there with what we do every year. We try to grow the best crop we can. There's an opportunity here. Please take advantage of it. And it's going to be, again, as the other guys have said, it's going to be a long growing season with lots of ups and downs. There's unknowns out there we don't know about that can hurt us in price. At this point, though, there's a lot of positive things that say prices still have opportunity to rally.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing online at BlueReefInc.com, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities. That's at RMCommodities.com. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.